Right now, there is a piece of code just sitting quietly in the digital waiting room of a regional power grid.
Yeah, just hanging out.
Literally just hanging out. It is not trying to steal customer data. It is definitely not preparing to lock up the servers and demand some massive ransom.
Right.
It is simply reading the digital equivalent of a magazine, checking the clock every, 15 days or so, and waiting for an order to turn the lights off.
Which is such a chilling image.
It really is. Welcome to the deep dive. We've custom tailored this exploration specifically for you, diving into the newly declassified Stealth Blue intelligence report from April 2026.
And this report is just incredibly dense.
Oh, absolutely. Our mission today is to cut through all that technical jargon and map out a fundamental, honestly frightening shift in how digital threats operate today. The gap between attackers and defenders hasn't just widened. I mean, it has become an absolute chasm. Okay, let's unpack this. Because reading through the intelligence here, the era of the lone hacker in a hoodie probing a firewall is just dead. We are now dealing with a fragmented, highly automated, and overwhelmingly fast ecosystem.
It's a completely different world now. And as we set the stage, and you might notice, the backdrop behind me has shifted to this glowing, interconnected digital cityscape to kind of reflect this new battlefield. We have to look at the primary catalyst.
Right, the engine behind it all.
Exactly. What's fascinating here is the report's bottom line up front, which states that generative AI has decisively crossed over.
It crossed the line from defense to offense.
Yeah, it is no longer just a defensive tool for anomaly detection. It is a primary, highly sophisticated offensive weapon now,
Yeah.
and it is fundamentally rewriting the physics of cyber attacks.
I want to start with the most visible part of this ecosystem. The attacks that are actually hitting local supply chains, municipalities, and schools. Ransomware.
The one everybody knows.
Right. Now, going into this report, I was working under the assumption that the massive 2024 law enforcement takedowns of the big cyber cartels, like groups like Lockbit, were a permanent win.
A lot of people thought that.
Yeah, I figured decapitating those syndicates would choke out the attacks. But looking at the Stealth Blue data, did we essentially just force them to become agile startups?
We really did. The intelligence absolutely points to that unintended consequence. The ecosystem didn't collapse at all, it just fractured.
Like a broken mirror.
Exactly. When those monolithic operations were taken offline, the affiliates, the operators who were actually deploying the malware, they scattered. And they reformed into dozens of smaller, incredibly aggressive, decentralized groups.
Right, the report tracks some new names.
Yeah, we were tracking names like Kwilin, Akira, Medusa, and Dragon Force. And without a massive cartel bureaucracy slowing them down, they have radically changed their operational tempo.
That speed is what jumps right off the page for me. I mean, the timeline from the initial network intrusion to the actual execution of the ransomware has compressed from an average of 9 days down to roughly five.
5 days is incredibly fast.
It's insane. I'm trying to figure out the mechanics of that compression, though. Are they just writing better code or are they skipping steps
Oh,
entirely?
they're definitely skipping steps, primarily by altering their supply chain. These smaller groups rarely bother trying to breach a perimeter themselves anymore.
Wait, really? They don't even hack in.
No, it takes too much time. They purchase pre-existing network access from what are called initial access brokers on the dark web.
Wow.
Yeah, so day one of their operation isn't about finding a vulnerability, it's just logging in with a purchased compromised credential.
So they just walk right through the front door.
Exactly. And from there, because they are decentralized, they use automated off-the-shelf deployment tools rather than waiting for custom payloads. They bypass that traditional dwell time where attackers used to quietly explore a network. They get in, they map the essential assets, and they strike.
So it's like a Hydra. Law enforcement cut off the head of the biggest syndicates, and dozens of smaller, faster heads took their place, going after easier targets.
That is the perfect analogy. And their targeting strategy has completely shifted to match that speed. They are operating on a high volume, low friction model now.
Right. The report notes that small and mid-sized businesses are absorbing 88% of these attacks, which I suppose if you are a decentralized group, you don't want to spend months trying to crack a Fortune 500 bank.
No, the resistance is too high.
You go after the regional accounting firm or the local logistics vendor because the resistance is minimal.
That is exactly the economic driver we are seeing. The payouts per victim are naturally smaller. The median ransom demand hitting small businesses sits around $120,000.
Which is still a lot of money for a small shop.
Oh, absolutely. And at volume, It provides a highly reliable cash flow for these groups. But the collateral damage of this volume-based approach is just devastating local infrastructure.
Like the hospitals and schools.
Yeah. When groups like Medusa hit a target, they aren't verifying what the target does beforehand. Like when they compromise the University of Mississippi Medical Center, they lock down electronic health records across dozens of clinics.
That's horrifying.
We are talking about critical patient care delayed for over a week, 9 days actually. And for K-12 schools, the disruption averages over 12 days of downtime. The friction isn't just financial anymore, it's societal.
And that overwhelming speed and volume we're seeing with this ransomware Hydra, it isn't happening in a vacuum. It provides the perfect entry point to talk about the engine powering all this chaos.
Generative AI.
Exactly. Yeah. You mentioned generative AI crossing the Rubicon. Here's where it gets really interesting, because the report outlines exactly how attackers are weaponizing it to just remove the human bottleneck from their operations.
The most immediate application is in social engineering. The era of spotting a phishing email because of poor syntax or strange formatting is definitively over.
Right. No more Nigerian prince emails with bad spelling.
Bon. AI models are synthesizing flawless, hyper-targeted lures at an industrial scale.
I was looking at the methodology for this in the report, and it's wild. They aren't just using AI to fix their grammar. They're hooking large language models into data scraping tools.
Yeah, the automation is terrifying.
The AI pulls a target's LinkedIn profile, scans their company's recent press releases, cross-references it with data from prior breaches, and just generates a contextually perfect email.
In seconds.
Right. You could post that you just returned from a trade show in Berlin, and 20 minutes later, an email lands in your inbox from someone claiming to be a vendor you met there. It'll reference a specific panel you both attended, complete with a malicious PDF invoice.
The cognitive load required for a normal person to spot that is immense.
I bet.
The report clocks the time it takes a user to fall for these AI-generated lures at under 60 seconds.
Less than a minute. Wow.
Yeah. And that automation extends far beyond just text and emails. There is a specific tactic detailed in the intelligence from a Pakistan-linked threat group known as APT-36.
The vibe coding thing.
Exactly. They have pioneered a concept they actually call vibe coding.
Yeah.
They utilize AI to rapidly generate malware.
But the code isn't even that good, right?
That's the fascinating aspect. The code isn't elegant at all. It is often mediocre, heavily fragmented, and sometimes entirely broken.
So why do they use it?
Because they compile and deploy it in such massive multi-language volumes that it serves a completely different strategic purpose. They call it distributed denial of detection.
I love that term, distributed denial of detection, because it perfectly illustrates the strategy. I was visualizing this from the perspective of a defender.
It's a nightmare for them.
If I'm sitting in a security operations center, my nightmare isn't necessarily one brilliant piece of stealth code. My nightmare is alert fatigue. Vibe coding is basically like spamming a fortress with a million cheap, disposable 3D printed drones instead of sending one expensive stealth bomber.
That's exactly what it is.
It doesn't matter that 99% of those drones crash harmlessly into the wall. What matters is that the defensive systems and the human analysts are so completely overwhelmed swatting away the garbage that the one drone that actually functions slips right through a window unnoticed.
The goal is absolutely to exhaust the defenders by flooding flat networks with noise. But if we synthesize all of this, the automated phishing, the vibe coding, the fact that over 300,000 ChatGPT credentials were sold on the dark web just last year.
300,000.
Yeah. And the broader implication of all that is a profound leveling of the playing field. Historically, a highly sophisticated multi-stage attack was the exclusive domain of well-funded nation-states.
The really big players.
Right. But today, a lone operator with a small budget and an AI toolkit can deploy tradecraft that basically mimics an advanced persistent threat. A regional hospital's IT team is now facing the same core offensive technology as a major defense contractor.
And that noise, that constant overwhelming flood of AI-generated alerts and rapid-fire ransomware, provides an incredible amount of cover. Which brings us to a much quieter and, frankly, far more dangerous reality detailed in the Stealth Blue report.
The critical infrastructure threat.
Yeah. Because as much chaos as financial cybercrime causes, what happens when the adversaries don't want your money? What happens when their sole objective is to physically break the real world?
This is the major shift in nation-state cyber strategy that the report highlights. The intelligence community is observing a stark divergence in tactics depending on the strategic goals of the actor.
Let's look at the aggressive end of that spectrum first. The report details Iran-linked actors, specifically a group operating under the name Handala, targeting programmable logic controllers.
Right. We are talking about the physical hardware that controls water flow in treatment plants, voltage in power grids, and signaling in transportation networks. This isn't theoretical espionage anymore.
No, it's very physical.
They actively caused a destructive attack on the medical device manufacturer Stryker, where they managed to trigger simultaneous factory resets on over 200,000 corporate devices across 79 countries. They aren't trying to hide.
No, their intent is immediate visible disruption.
Yeah.
But on the opposite end of the spectrum, you have China-aligned actors groups designated as Salt Typhoon and Volt Typhoon. Their methodology is the exact opposite of a smash and grab.
They are playing the long game.
Very long. Their strategy relies on long dwell pre-positioning.
Which brings us back to that digital sleeper agent we talked about at the beginning. Wait, so they are essentially planting digital sleeper agents, just sitting in the power grid's waiting room, reading magazines for months, waiting for an order.
Yes. They are infiltrating telecommunications and critical transportation networks, and then they just stop.
That is so creepy.
The discipline required for that is chilling. They establish a foothold and go completely dormant for weeks. When they do communicate with their command and control servers, it's perhaps once every 15 to 20 days.
Barely a blip.
And they deliberately script those check-ins to occur only during the target's normal local business hours. They are perfectly camouflaging their traffic inside the daily hum of the organization's legitimate IT operations.
So they just blend right in.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it aligns entirely with recent public statements from the National Security Agency. For decades, the primary concern with nation-state cyber activity was espionage stealing fighter jet schematics or diplomatic cables.
Right, data theft.
That is now a secondary objective. The primary objective is establishing the capability to disrupt critical operations at a moment's notice. And the reason they are able to reach these critical operations stems from a structural vulnerability we built ourselves.
The blending of IT and OT.
The aggressive convergence of information technology and operational technology, yes.
I'm looking at this IT and OT blending, and it seems like a massive self-inflicted wound. For decades, operational technology, you know, the systems physically managing dams and power grids was strictly air-gapped.
Completely isolated.
It was physically disconnected from the information technology side, like the email servers and payroll systems. Did industries just decide that the cost savings of remote management were worth the risk of a systemic infrastructure collapse? Or did they genuinely not foresee the threat models evolving this way?
It was driven primarily by the relentless pursuit of efficiency, which was accelerated heavily by the shift to remote work. Managing an air-gapped environment is expensive. It requires a physical presence.
You actually have to go to the dam to flip the switch.
Exactly. So to cut costs and streamline operations, organizations began slapping internet-facing management interfaces onto legacy industrial equipment. They essentially built digital bridges directly from the internet into their most sensitive control environments.
That sounds like a terrible idea in hindsight.
It really was. When you combine that poorly segmented architecture with automated AI scanning tools that can map vulnerabilities at a global scale in minutes, adversaries don't need a sophisticated exploit. They just walk across the bridge we built for them.
So we have nation states quietly sitting in the power grid and decentralized cartels using AI to batter our local supply chains. The scale of this report is almost paralyzing.
It can definitely feel overwhelming.
But the intelligence actually devotes a significant portion of its analysis to the individual, how this trickles down to you, the listener, and the defense mechanisms you can deploy in your own living room. Because the collateral damage of this AI revolution is a massive surge in fraud targeting individuals.
The financial impact is unprecedented. The latest data indicates cyber-enabled fraud losses hit $17.6 billion globally.
Billion with a B.
Yes. And it is largely driven by AI-enhanced scams that completely bypass traditional verification methods. For instance, the rise of synthetic identity fraud.
The mechanics of synthetic fraud are fascinating in a very grim way. They aren't just stealing a single person's identity. They use AI to stitch together a Frankenstein profile.
Right, pulling pieces from everywhere.
They take a real social security number, often belonging to a minor, and attach a completely fabricated AI-generated face, name, and address to it. They use this ghost identity to open credit lines, slowly build a legitimate-looking credit score, and then max out the accounts and vanish.
And the systems don't catch it.
No. The banks know your customer algorithms completely fail to detect it because the data points look technically valid.
And we are seeing similar applications in deepfake investment videos, where adversaries synthesize a CEO's likeness to push fraudulent crypto platforms. Or even highly targeted romance scams, orchestrated entirely by autonomous language models.
An AI chatbot breaking hearts and stealing wallets.
Pretty much. The threat surface for an individual has never been larger.
But the Stealth Blue report counters this with a very specific, actionable framework they call the 30-minute personal checklist. And the absolute foundation of that list, the most effective defense against this wave of identity theft, is executing a credit freeze across all three major bureaus.
Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion.
Right. And the report stresses how critical it is to do this for children. I hadn't considered the logic before, but a minor's social security number is the ultimate blank slate. It has no credit history, and more importantly, no one checks it for 18 years.
Exactly. By the time the fraud is discovered, the damage is deeply entrenched.
So you have to freeze it early.
Securing that baseline is vital. The next layer of the checklist addresses our fundamental human limitations, which means using password managers.
Right, because we are terrible at making passwords.
We really are. In a landscape where AI can brute force credentials instantly or cross-reference billions of leaked passwords in seconds, human memory is a massive vulnerability.
Mm.
We reuse passwords because complex ones are impossible to remember. A password manager eliminates the reuse vulnerability entirely.
And that leads to the final and perhaps most crucial technical defense, multi-factor authentication.
MFA.
But the report places a massive flashing warning label here. Standard SMS text messages for your two-factor code are obsolete. You have to upgrade to FIDO2 hardware keys or passkeys. I want to drill into the why here. Why did text messages suddenly become a liability?
The vulnerability lies in the telecommunications infrastructure itself. Attackers frequently utilize a tactic called SIM swapping.
How does that work?
Through social engineering or even bribing an insider at a mobile carrier, they port your phone number to a device they control.
So they basically steal your phone number.
Yes. The moment they have your number, they receive all your authentication texts. The text message MFA is completely bypassed without the attacker ever needing to touch your physical phone.
Which is why the passkey is so effective. So what does this all mean? Using a passkey isn't just putting a thicker deadbolt on your front door. It's removing the lock entirely and replacing it with a localized biometric scanner.
That's a great way to look at it.
Even if an attacker tricks the telecom company into routing your calls to them, there is no keypad for them to punch a stolen SMS code into. The authentication physically requires the device in your hand. It breaks the remote attack chain.
Precisely. The cryptographic key never leaves the device, neutralizing the SIM swapping threat entirely.
But out of all the highly technical defenses in this report, my absolute favorite is the countermeasure against AI voice cloning. Attackers only need a few seconds of your voice from a public audio clip or a social media post to perfectly mimic you.
It's scary how little audio they need.
And then they use it in a panicked phone call to your family demanding emergency funds. But the report's solution, the family passphrase.
I love this one.
A pre-agreed upon random word you establish at the dinner table. If you get a terrifying call from a loved one, you demand the passphrase. If they don't know it, you hang up.
This raises an important question, and it highlights a profound irony in modern cybersecurity. We exist in a world completely dominated by hyper-advanced, self-learning algorithms capable of breaking down digital borders.
Yeah.
Yet, our ultimate failsafe, the mechanism that completely stops an AI dead in its tracks, is an out-of-band, low-tech, verbal confirmation. Human verification, anchored in a shared secret that never touched a digital network, is the final firewall.
It is brilliant in its simplicity. So just looking back, we've covered an immense amount of ground mapping out this intelligence report today. We explored how the takedown of massive ransomware cartels ironically spawned a faster, decentralized Hydra hitting our local infrastructure.
They really did.
We looked under the hood of the AI arsenal, seeing how vibe coding and automated phishing are drowning defenders in noise. We examined the terrifying reality of nation states exploiting the IT-OT bridge to sit quietly inside our power grids. And we brought it all back to the fact that the front line of defense actually relies on actionable individual habits.
Before we conclude, though, there is one final forward-looking concept buried in the appendix of the report that I believe requires serious consideration.
Oh, what's that?
It outlines a long-term strategic threat known as Harvest Now, Decrypt Later.
Harvest Now, Decrypt Later. Walk us through the mechanics of that.
Right now, Adversaries are actively vacuuming up massive troves of heavily encrypted data directly from transit points on the internet. We are talking about classified government communications, proprietary control system designs, advanced intellectual property.
But they can't read it, right?
To current technology, this data is completely unreadable. The mathematical complexity of our modern encryption is just too strong to break. But the threat actors aren't trying to read it today. They are simply building massive data centers to hoard it.
Wait, because they are anticipating a technological breakthrough, they're playing a 10-year waiting game?
Exactly. They are betting on the maturation of quantum computing.
Oh, wow.
When a stable, large-scale quantum computer comes online, algorithms that would take a traditional supercomputer thousands of years to solve will be cracked in seconds. The mathematical foundations of our current encryption will just evaporate.
They are stealing the locked safe today, knowing full well they will invent the master key a decade from now.
That's exactly it. So the thought I want to leave you, the listener, with is this. Consider the digital secrets you are locking away today, operating under the assumption that they are perfectly secure.
Right.
When that quantum threshold is crossed, are you prepared for the data you transmitted today to suddenly become completely transparent tomorrow?
That is a haunting reality to consider, a delayed action threat hiding in plain sight. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the Stealth Blue Report. We highly encourage you to take 30 minutes tonight, set up that family passphrase, execute the credit freezes, and transition your accounts to passkeys. The digital battlefield may have shifted into something silent and highly automated, but your defenses do not have to remain static. Keep questioning the systems around you, keep learning, and stay curious.